What are we talking about?
Snakes.
Are we recording?
That's such a bad intro to a professional podcast. Something got floated about pre-hospital, out-of-hospital babies. And everyone went, oh, we don't know anything about that.
Yeah,
and that's why it's a good conversation.
I'm hungry.
Because there's things that terrify paramedics. And I reckon one of the biggest things to terrify paramedics is the thought of catching a baby. How many have you caught, Nick?
I haven't done an intro yet.
That's okay. We've started.
Okay.
This is it.
How many babies have I caught?
See how he tried to deflect away from the babies?
He doesn't even want to talk about it.
No, right?
I don't know.
Because he's scared.
Like 10? 12?
So that's, I mean, you're averaging one every 12 months.
I didn't catch my first baby.
To get better at a skill, you've got to do it 6 times a year.
Oh,
yucky.
How many times have you caught babies?
Let's flip it. How many times have you caught babies?
With 4 legs?
Yes.
Zero.
Really?
Oh, how many animal babies have you delivered?
For those unaware, Lou's transitioning from veterinary nursing to paramedics.
What's your favourite animal deliver a baby?
Like
you prefer delivering kittens or puppies?
Kittens are pretty cute.
Okay.
So any real babies?
Human babies.
Zero.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
Zero. Do you feel more prepared to deliver human babies because you've delivered kittens?
Oh, no.
They're not as slippery.
No. They're less
slippery.
There's
less of them, though.
And there's...
Yeah, that's true.
How many kittens in a litter?
Ooh. You're asking all the hard questions. It all depends,
roughly.
Really. That's a really great question, and I don't want to give wrong information, but...
It's fine. Just do it.
I mean, 6 sounds like a good number.
Imagine going to a woman who's pregnant and be like, oh, we're gonna get 6 out of you.
Yeah. There was a puppy once that had, I think, 11, 12, big dog. It just kept popping them out. So imagine managing that.
Were they preemie?
No.
No, so that's standard.
They're all very healthy. Yeah.
Imagine the food bill.
Hey, have you ever been responsible catching twins or managing someone?
I have, actually.
Right.
I delivered a bridge twin.
We want to unpack this then. In ambulance services, I've caught 4.
Mm-hmm.
In humanitarian operations, I've caught 3.
Mm-hmm.
And buying eggs and milk and toast one morning, I caught 1.
Sorry, what?
I know.
So you were out at Coles, Woolies?
No, I was at a Woolworths. I was at a Woolworths, and I can tell you I was walking past aisle 8, and I saw this lady kind of hunched over, and I regretted it immediately, not because I'm inhumane, but it's just like I'm on a day off. But I'd made the just critical error of saying, hey, are you okay? And she said, no, I'm in labor. And I just went, hey. You should have seen the response of the 15-year-old pimply-faced manager that had to go, hey, man, there's a woman in labor in aisle 8.
What do I do?
But, I mean, the irony is, we're going to unpack yours in a second.
Mm.
Woolworths and Coles have got to be the best place to actually catch a baby. Because literally, there's a little dude, he's like, you know, we're going to call an ambulance, anything you can do? And I'm like, well, just get some sheets from the linen aisle and at least put them across aisle 8, give us some privacy. And actually, while we're in the linen aisle, let's get some cushions and blankets so we could literally just lie down. And then I realized she's actually imminent. Go get me some gloves from the dishwashing aisle. So we got blankets, pillows, cushions, sheets, gloves. Man, can you get me some cookies? He did.
For you.
Like, you got everything you need in Woolworths.
Why did she get cookies?
It was selfishly for me.
Yeah.
It was opportune. It was an opportunistic moment, so. But we literally caught the baby in aisle 8, and then the crew came, and, you know, in my head, I'm like, so if this crew doesn't come, I mean, I go to the stationary aisle, there's bull clips, so I can at least, you know, clamp the cord. No, I'm joking. I don't.
Was it quite a quick labour?
I would say it was rather quick. I don't think most people would be out shopping in Woolworths if they were expecting, you know, like I think it caught her off guard. It sure as hell caught me off guard. You can't even claim overtime on those kinds of things, so.
Wow.
Standard obstetrics though, Nick. Why are paramedics so fearful of them?
I think there's a number of reasons. Why are you scared of obstetrics, Lou?
Ooh. I think there so many things can go wrong because you have 2 patients and you have a newborn, and already paramedics are terrified of pediatrics.
It's a normal physiological process. This is like one of the few things a paramedic can manage that's not an unfortunate or a bad. It's expected.
Yeah. But why?
Why people?
Yeah.
I think it doesn't happen that often for paramedics, you know. Like, I mean, midwives aren't scared of it because they literally manage a dozen a day, more. Whereas it's one of those things, I mean, when a paramedic does, it's always in the media.
That's so true. You see the photo of them in front of the station with the baby and the
which
mom.
I have a problem with.
Yes.
Here's my issue with that is that it gets put in the media like this paramedic delivered a baby or this comms operator.
Paramedic caught a baby. We've got to get the terminology because right? The paramedic didn't deliver. The mother did.
Correct.
Yes.
The paramedic was there to supervise. The mother delivered the child. The mother did all the work. They were there just in case something went wrong, but the mother does it all. So this notion that, oh, look, this paramedic delivered a baby or, no, they caught the baby and then assisted with some complications. That's it.
Caused some complications.
Yeah.
No, I've always got in trouble for bringing in cold babies.
I will talk about cold
babies. The midwives.
And look, I actually, there's no tribalism from my perspective. I'm happy to work with anyone. I'm actually happy to defer to them as the subject matter experts because if, what, four, three, one, I was doing maths then. Eight babies caught in a career does not make you a subject matter expert on anything. It actually makes you a pleb who is ill-prepared.
So this is called What Would You Do If You Had to Catch a Baby? Lou, you're our curious host.
Yeah.
I like these. I like these podcasts. What would you do if?
I want you to propose a situation and pick our brains.
All right.
Pick them.
Okay. You are called to a 22-year-old female in labour.
Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going through my head. Oh, dear.
Mum is on scene.
See, I'm not necessarily deferring straight to the old dear because I'm looking at whichever seat I'm sitting in if I'm in an ambulance. Like, if I'm in the driver's seat, I'm like, ah, Nick, stand up, buddy. But if I'm in the patient care seat in the ambulance, I'm like, oh, Sonny, you better step up.
Not only are you going to a birth, but you are a single officer.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That's a big idea.
So this is interesting, Lou, because so many people attribute paramedicine to ambulance and ambulance to having two in the crew, right? Over most of my career, I was actually by myself, and all of my career in the private sector has been by myself.
Yep.
So it's very rare for me to actually have had a partner apart from the last few years, which I now relish to, by the way, because you can defer. But a solo officer, how does that change things, Nick?
The challenge becomes when you have a complication. Well, like you said before, you have two patients. You have the baby and you have the mother. So if there's a complication with either, you're going to be focused on that patient, right? So if baby's a bit flat and needs a few things done, then you get distracted away from mum and vice versa. Or if both of them have complications, that's an issue. So one of the things I do when, if I'm going to an obstetrics case where there is the potential, it might sound like there's going to be a complication, is try and get some additional resources because you have two patients. It's not, you have one ambulance and one CCP.
What would be some of the information that would indicate there may be a complication?
Well, it could be a history of complications, advanced age. It could be some of the clinical notes like, you know, mum's fatigued, or there's a foot showing, or
premature,
the head's bobbing, or it's premature, or there's twins, or something like that. Or it's known placenta previa, where mum can't have a natural birth, or she's pregnant and she's had a trauma and she's bleeding, like a placental abruption.
In a world, though, that, I mean, depending on what you subscribe to, is either 5,000 years old or 500 million years old or whatever, women have been giving birth reasonably successfully, considering we're here, for that time. Why is there a need for our interventions?
Because,
especially considering how limited we are exposed to this.
I think, and I'm not a midwife, but I think generally women are fantastic at delivering babies.
Well,
I
hope so.
Sometimes it goes wrong. When it goes wrong, it can go catastrophically wrong. And there are some interventions that we can offer to assist that. Like, for example, you know, a breech baby or a shoulder dystocia. A shoulder dystocia, if that child stays there, they're just going to die.
I would agree, but I'm going to defer to the first one I ever saw. I shat myself, right? The baby looked like an alien. The baby looked like a cross between an alien and a tadpole. There was more body fluid and blood than I've ever seen at a trauma case. and there were now two patients. They were also attached by something I'd never seen before that was pulsing. I thought that both the mother and the child were critical from just about every single perspective I could look at because of my uninitiated, uneducated, and inexperienced inexperienced experience. Inexperienced approach to out of hospital deliveries. And this is, so I've seen this happen even with other crews where, you know, I've seen crews going lights and sirens to hospital with what we'd actually call their normal cephalic delivery.
Mm.
So they're putting everyone on the road at risk. They're putting the mother and the child at risk. They're stressing the mother out. They're stressing themselves out because they've been inexperienced in it.
Can we just address that quickly?
Yeah.
For our listeners out there, please don't take patients who are in labor, cope on the hospital. It's dangerous and there's no need.
All you're doing is lights and sirens.
Well, yeah, lights and sirens. All you're doing is treating your own anxiety. And at the end of the day, we're trained to care for these patients. We're trained to deliver that child. Yes, it's not ideal for a mother to deliver a child in the back of an ambulance, but that's better than having an accident and harming that mother or child unnecessarily. So please stop taking patients, lights and sirens to hospital who have no indicators of a complication.
The indicators, though, might be misinterpreted.
Mm. Like someone who's imminent, just you can deliver that baby or assist mum to deliver that baby. But let's go back to our lady, Lou.
Mm. Oh, yes. Case study.
22-year-old female.
Yep.
You're by yourself.
Yep. Oh.
Oh, dear.
Time of day.
Let's go. Ooh, 2 a.m.
2 a.m.
That's fair.
Best time.
Of course.
Yep. It's just you.
Yes.
Yep. And that's all the information you have?
This is her first birth.
Can I just throw a curveball at Nick then?
Yep, go.
Yeah, ahead. He gets on scene and there's no power at the house. Yeah, they haven't been paying their power bills.
Oh, okay.
How's that going to change your judgment?
Luckily, I always have a head torch.
Excellent. It's just
prepared.
Sometimes this does defer to low socioeconomic and then, you know, a judgment, but you find a mother in the bathtub on all fours.
Oh, dear.
With a shower hose with really hot water on her belly, and she's in pain. Is that like any scenario you've done through your training,
Luke? No. And there's always two of us.
So I guess I would approach that like any other case. You're going to gather a history, find out what's going on.
She's not speaking. She's just moaning, groaning, and in a lot of pain.
And mum's on scene, but mum's also stressed.
Yeah.
Her mum.
It's dark.
Yeah. No lights.
Yeah. Mm. It's getting, it's really, really humid in there too. Do you know what's funny, Lou?
What?
This is actually the first case I ever did as an ambulance officer.
There you go.
It was nothing like anything I trained before because every single training scenario I had done was the birthing mannequin on her back with the legs that you can manipulate and you just, it's so easy. And when I walked
got my gown on, got my gloves on.
When I walked in there and it was dark and she was on all fours in a confined space like a bathtub with a complication like a hose or the shower, I had that look on my face.
A look of excitement.
Just yes. The kits like this.
Oh, no.
Where?
Oh, 100%. I think of all the, a lot of obstetric cases I've been to have never been what I've trained to do.
No.
But this lady here, she's on all fours. That's okay. You can deliver a baby on all fours, right? We are just not comfortable with it, like you said, because we haven't trained for it. But let's get rid of the shower hose. Because, you know, a wet baby gets cold and a cold baby is bad.
Oh, it was warm. It was hot, hot, warm.
Let's get rid of that. And maybe do an exam and just see if there's any, like, presenting part, see if she's imminent, find out how frequent her contractions are. There's some stuff around, like, oh, if they're more, as, generally speaking, the more frequent they are, the more imminent they are. But I wouldn't say, like, there's a direct science about it.
All right. I'm going to throw a curveball at Nick because a question that I get asked a lot by people who are inexperienced in this, and the irony is I think I'm inexperienced in this, is everything you described is textbook, right? Yeah. We need to do an assessment. We need to figure out how our contractions are, where there's a presenting part, et cetera, et cetera. How do you build rapport with a woman you've just met and then you need to get that personal with her like that? Because sometimes they've still got their underwear on.
Mm.
How do you build rapport? Hi, I'm Nick.
Let's have a baby.
Yeah.
How do you build rapport? So I think honesty is great and acknowledgement of her and saying, hey, I understand you're very uncomfortable. I understand this is
probably... Don't talk to me, man.
I understand this is not what you want, but I'm here to help you deliver your baby. How can I help you? And get them engaged. And that's how I would approach it, really.
I don't think I've ever said anything sensible. Nothing rehearsed and nothing constructed.
I think like acknowledgement is a big thing, acknowledging that this is really uncomfortable for them. And they probably didn't, at the start of their pregnancy, they probably weren't like, you know what? I want to have my baby in a bath on all fours at 2 o'clock in the morning with a single male paramedic, right? That's probably what's going through their mind. And the next thing is, oh God, is everything going to be okay? Is everything going to be okay? So I think if you hit those 2 points and acknowledge them, those 2 points, that goes a long way to gaining some rapport and empathizing. I understand you're in a lot of pain. It must really suck.
Have you ever had someone not refuse, but you struggle to build a rapport with? They don't want you to inspect. They don't want you to look. They don't want to be there. They just want to get out of there. They don't want to...
Personally, no.
Okay.
But that's not to say that it doesn't.
No, and there's an irony to that question too, is because just reflecting on my experiences, I've never had a mother-to-be who's in obvious labor in any other situation than help. Just help me. It's going to sound really bad. Help me get this thing out of me. Right? Is the general consensus I've got from just about every mother-to-be that I've ever been with. So I actually haven't had to spend that much time trying to build a rapport because I've been called there for an obvious reason. And they are feeling, whether it be pain, discomfort, anything, and they've seen me come in, and I don't even think you'd call it a sense of relief sometimes because they are just too busy. But I think I've had enough time to literally introduce myself and then ask a simple question like, how close are your contractions? If they are close, do you mind if I have a quick look? And I mean, there's been a couple that literally have a presenting part, and it's, you know, we're delivering within a few minutes of being on scene. There's others I've been there that we've got there just after she's delivered. And then there's others that, you know, the contractions are still up to 2 minutes apart. Well, let's just take this nice and gently. And would you prefer to have it in a house or run the risk of having it in the ambulance if we try and get to hospital? So I don't, it's been an interesting experience for me because I don't think I've ever had pushback.
Can I ask if you've ever dealt with partners that have had issues?
Yes. But I think, again, it's about explaining to them exactly what your role is and how you can assist. And it's for mum safety and bub safety. Mum's doing all the work. I'm here to keep everyone safe.
Leo, yeah,
this is the option at the moment. There is no other options.
Yep.
And generally that it's a pretty good. Now, in some cultural circles, they don't like males being involved and we need to respect that. But, you know, you might be working in a context where that's just not possible.
And that's that point specifically was what I was about to say, Lou, is I've actually been put in one of the most ethically and legally complex, awkward moments because of a mother in labor. And it was because of the cultural boundaries around what was going on. But I was working with another male colleague when we were dispatched to an imminent delivery, and it wasn't that late. It was about 10 p.m. And when we got there, the front yard was just littered with men. Right? And there was almost immediate animosity to our exit of the vehicle because they had specifically requested a female crew, and that had been lost in translation. Whoever had dispatched had literally just sent us. And so before we can even touch the patient, we've actually now got to de-escalate the situation and try and get that partner and the family on side to say, hey, we're here to support you. We will request a second crew. We're not going to force our way in. We're not going to do anything. Is she okay? None of them knew. They're not allowed in there. When the second crew arrived, just to inflame the situation, two men stepped out. Yeah. Now, thankfully, I had done the request in front of them, so they had heard the request. But there were no female crews available. And what they had sent us was a male crew with a female student, a first year. Can you imagine being a first year thrust into this situation? Where we basically then had to support this female soon-to-be officer and say, we need you to go inside and we just need you to observe what's going on and then come back and tell us. And then we are going to tell you what may or may not need to be done. Yeah. Now, long story short, this girl actually, I mean, she was a weapon. She was only 22. She went in, she observed, she came out, she reported. We gave her some feedback. She went back in. She came back out and said, oh, I've caught the baby. We wrapped it. Right. But I have never been put in a more complicated, complex, ethical, legal wow. dilemma in my life. And I didn't touch the patient, see the patient, or manage the patient. So it's the cultural ramifications sometimes are the most complex before we've even unpacked just a normal standard cephalic delivery.
Mm.
How many of yours has been just normal cephalic deliveries?
I think most of them. I've done one breach. That was...
What was the presentation?
That was a lady. She was... premature, I think 8 to 10 weeks preemie, and then just had a spontaneous footling breach of one of her twins at home. And the crew had turned up and attempted to deliver one of the children but couldn't. So, and they'd only been there for a very short period of
time. I was going to say, talk to me about time.
So they had turned up and the patient was kind of standing, holding onto two rails with his foot out, going, help me. And they've just laid her down, done an exam, and then I've turned up and had a look, and it's a footling breach. A very blue foot. I vividly remember holding this child and starting my maneuvers and the child not moving and the body not twisting. Cool. So you want to be able to thumbs on bums and twist. So the baby is perpendicular to sweep their arm down. And then release that shoulder, turn the other way, release the other shoulder, deliver the head. I vividly remember the baby not turning and me thinking to myself, if I'm more aggressive, I'm going to hurt this child. If I'm not aggressive enough, I'm not going to get it out and it's going to die. And I had this internal
conflict.
And I've never, there's only two or three times in my career that I've had that kind of yucky, horrible feeling in my gut, and I never want to feel that way again. It was horrible, and I can't describe it. It was like a feeling of helplessness that you couldn't fix this problem and that the consequences were like quite significant. Fortunately, the maneuvers eventually worked. The baby came out very flat, and
Had this baby aspirated anything while still inside?
Yes. But fortunately, that child had a good outcome and the other child did well as well. So it was a good outcome in the end, but certainly a very challenging case because I think back on it and it was nothing like the breech birth trainers that I had used in my training.
I've literally just jumped on the clinical guideline manifesto while you were speaking because you're speaking about external and internal maneuvers to essentially free a child that's come the wrong way and gotten stuck in a birth canal. So when that child gets stuck, we're looking at potentially death of the mother and the child within minutes. You know, like this actually can be quite quickly. So I just jumped on the clinical guideline manifesto, which is, of course, that project that our colleague Matt Wilkinson-Stokes put together over a couple of years with a lot of collaborators, but he compared clinical interventions by numerous ambulance services around Australia. And I was just curious because breech delivery is not included in three service guidelines in Australia in 2024. So there would be listeners out there who not only have not been trained or not exposed to breech delivery, but not even trained in how to intervene if they're presented with it.
Mm.
Now, that raises one or two questions. Is one, how often does this happen? Because you potentially can't prepare for every single eventuality. But at the same time, I mean, it does happen. You know, I mean, you've been to one.
Mm.
I know a handful of people that have also managed a breech delivery. So without having statistics in front of me, it does happen. But for the services and the paramedics out there that have no guidelines, can you just walk us through quickly these interventions? Just a quick explanation of what they are or what they're attempting to do.
Yeah, sure. So we could even use a case study. Let's say she's having a breech delivery.
Okay, so this is the 22-year-old at, did you say 2 in the morning?
Yep.
Gee, we love twos.
I know.
22-year-old at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Her address is 2220 Street, And it's 2022.
She's got two babies.
And she's got two babies. Oh, my goodness me. So she's in a bathtub and, well, let's say she's footling presentation. So breach.
What would you do, Lou?
Well, actually, start at the very beginning because if there's no guidelines and no education here on even three of the services, what is footling?
Oh. Yeah. For all our students listening.
What is Frank?
Frank's my mate.
What is kneeling?
Frank's my nephew, actually.
See, I actually call it footling, kneeling, and arsing, but that's me being inappropriate.
Yeah. So essentially, there's three types. Well, there's four types, but let's just call it three types of breech birth. So breech birth, the definition, is essentially where a baby doesn't come out head first. So a normal cephalic delivery is head first. Out they come. Breech is another part of the anatomy. So either footling being the foot, a frank, which is, I think, bum, and then a complete, which is bum and feet. And then
is where bum and feet are same time. Yeah. Frank has got the feet up around the ears, and it's literally just the ass coming out.
Yeah, and then kneeling is the knee can kind of come out. But it's kind of like a footling, but the foot's kind of caught, and you just flick it out.
Yeah, I've been told by someone that if you have any of the breeches, having a frank is sometimes the easiest. Mm. I get it. Sorry, so inappropriate.
Sorry.
But I don't think you want any.
Yeah. The issue with breech births is that when the head goes through the birth canal and engages it, everything dilates, which allows the head to move through. And then once the head, being the biggest part of the baby, gets through, the rest will come. But if the feet go first or the bum comes first, it's a smaller part of the baby. Therefore, it hasn't had that pressure to dilate everything. So it's more likely to become obstructed and have an obstructed birth. And the mother can't generally push the baby out without maneuvers, is my understanding of it. Now, the reason why I was less concerned about that breech birth is because I was a breech birth. I was a twin and I was born at 32 weeks and I turned out okay.
You were a twin?
I'm a twin.
What?
I was a twin.
I've known you for over a decade.
I have a twin sister.
I never knew you were a twin.
Yep. So I was a footling breech twin born at 31 weeks.
Oh my God.
In the 90s, and I turned out all right. So if I can turn out all right, being an obstetric emergency, I've got some confidence that this person's going
to
be okay.
What a way to enter the world, Nickabussy.
I did spend 3 months in NICU, but that's another conversation.
Talk about that later.
So yeah. What else do you want to know, Lou?
Oh, yeah. So you arrive on scene.
Yes.
The first things that we're doing is getting a little bit of a history.
Yeah.
The positioning of the mother,
mm-hmm.
Is it what is most comfortable for her or is it what you want her to be in?
Oh, I'm going to jump straight in.
Oh, I feel like...
I think Sunny and I are going to sing from the same songbook on this one.
I can't stand it when people manipulate patients into where they think they should be. A patient is the subject matter expert on what hurts them the least.
If she got into the bath on all fours, there's a reason for that.
So you leave her in...
Correct. Or you ask her, how can I make you more comfortable? Yep. And she'll say, get me out of this bath.
Yep.
Or she might say, nah, I'm all good.
Yep.
I'm not moving. You can't make me move.
Yep.
And that's a very quick way to lose rapport with someone when you're like, no, birthing mother, you will do as I say. Nah, don't do that.
Mm.
So, yes. So.
Leave her. Yes, in that position of comfort. Okay, we've got a little bit of a history.
Yes.
We know this is her first birth. She's happy in that position. So we want to know, is she okay?
Yes, she's well.
Yep.
She's all the big things you're looking for really are, does she have any antenatal complications like high blood pressure, diabetes, any other major medical problems?
So straight off the bat, you're going to want to ask these questions.
Yeah, but the things you want to find out about her specific pregnancy is how many weeks is she? How many babies is she planned to have?
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that we'll go into later.
Mm-hmm.
Any complications with bub, is it in the right position, and any other previous maternal history, like have you had a baby before?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Have you had a cesarean?
If I was behind Nick, and I know he's by himself on this, but if I was behind Nick and he had a woman on all fours with a foot hanging out of her and he said, what position is the baby in to the mother? I would actually probably laugh inappropriately. But that's me being a supportive work partner. Interestingly, one of the external maneuvers for breech, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, is to position the mother on all fours if possible.
Yes.
There was a pause.
I think that's for shoulder dystocia.
Okay, I'm going to look it up. Let's get educated right now. Let's get educated.
All right. So we've got a bit of that history.
Breech management. Here we go.
We know mum's
all fours.
Okay. All
fours. All fours is recommended as a position for breech management by ambulance services in New South Wales, Queensland, Victoria. And I think that's it. Yeah, three services recommending it. Three services not recommending it. Or just not recommending it.
Mm.
And then two services, no CPG at all.
Yeah, right.
For breech. So, yeah, it's like six in one, half a dozen in the other. I mean, the thought process, I'm sure, is similar to shoulder dystocia, where that all fours position is thought to open that birth canal up slightly.
Yep.
And I mean, any kind of breach, any expansion on that is obviously going to assist. So none of this was in my head when I saw her on all fours either. I'm just going to point that out. My brain went to mush and just, oh my God. But it's a good conversation because all fours obviously has some advantages, whether it's been thought of by others, who knows.
Mm.
Next.
What's next, Lou?
Baby.
Le bébé.
Bébé. So we've built that rapport with mum. We're wanting to have a look
mm-hmm.
and see what's going on.
Yeah, we see a foot.
Oh.
Little foot. Hello.
Oh.
What do you do in veterinary science? I mean, if it's a cow, you pull it, don't you?
Yeah. probably a C-section before it gets to that point, right?
Unfortunately, we don't do a pre-hospital C-sections.
Oh, why not?
Oh, it's just...
It's coming.
Well, you know what? Potentially one day it could be.
I was going to say something really inappropriate, but I'm not going to.
Glad you didn't.
Cut that bit out of the podcast.
Everything starts in a hospital and ends up pre-hospitally at some point because obviously taking care to the person is more beneficial than transporting the person to care. So you're probably right at some stage.
Maybe we will see them.
Mm.
We see cesareans in some out-of-hospital teams in cases of cardiac arrest.
Yeah, I've heard these.
Perimortem cesarean.
Yeah.
And that's for the mother, not for the child. It's to remove that that baby to reduce the burden for oxygen and nutrients and blood to the fetus so it can be redirected back to the mother. So in that setting, the baby is dead. It's removing that to resuscitate mum.
How do you determine if the baby is actually dead?
It'll be dead by that point. Because part of a way in which a mother will compensate when they're shocked is to
shunt
the blood away from non-vital organs, your hands, your feet, your kidneys, your liver, the baby.
Yeah.
So by the time mum is compensating, baby's decompensating. By the time mum's decompensating, bubba's very sick. By the time mum's in cardiac arrest, bubba's is gone.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult conversation and it's challenging, I think, for us as human beings to be like, I'm not trying to save this child, but that's the reality of it, is that that child is likely dead. Especially from a trauma perspective where they died slowly. If mum was sitting there and has a VF arrest, maybe, in a hospital, bub comes out. That happened in Tasmania. A lady had a cardiac arrest really close to the hospital, and I think bub did okay.
I thought that was from a vehicular crash, but maybe we can look it up later.
Depends on the cause. Like, if it's slow, slow, slow bleed, mum's and bub's probably going to do badly. If it's fast change cardiac arrest, like a VF arrest or something, maybe there's a chance.
I feel like the one in Tasmania,
I can't remember.
The mother was impacted by the vehicular crash and they performed a C-section to save the baby.
Oh.
So it was the other. And I'm pretty sure it was successful. The mother unfortunately died.
Maybe she had like a significant head injury.
This is why I think too there's so much fear around these things, Lou, is because catching a baby is one of the most rewarding things you can do. It's a physiological process. You get to be there at the very beginning of someone's life rather than paramedic self and being at the end. Being at the beginning of a life is a very special moment. So if it is a cephalic delivery, if everything's normal, if everything goes to plan, we should have zero interventions apart from providing blankets, you know, and some support, to the complete opposite where it can actually be the worst day of your career. Mm. Because rather than welcoming a little, you know, new life into the world, they're either not surviving or the mother is not surviving. So I think that like the pendulum can swing both ways, but it comes back to that initial assessment, the presenting part. So what does a normal cephalic delivery look like? Depending on which circles of thought you subscribe to and where you've trained and who's educated you, et cetera, I'm by no means a subject matter expert on it. But one of the interventions is just providing gentle pressure to the top of that occiput to prevent explosive delivery. Yeah, just a nice gentle easement. And, you know, there's been so many people tell me about when the mother should pant, when the mother should push. Again, if I benchmark against my experiences, the mother's been all over when she needs to pant or push. You know, I'm just there to support. And if we can prevent that explosive delivery, great, it's worked for me. Once you've got the head, is it possible that the baby can breathe? Is it possible for that baby to take its first breath while it's still in situ?
I'm not an expert. Sure, why not?
I don't know. I think it could be possible.
Anything's possible.
That would be somewhat terrifying for me, even though it is a cephalic delivery.
Oh, I think on that breech birth, that child was trying to breathe with the head still in.
Well, and that is one of the
and
issues.
It was really, like, off-putting.
Why would that terrify you, can I ask?
There'd be a lot of pressure on that little baby's thoracic cavity, and although that, you know, hopefully there's still blood circulating through the umbilical cord, that little dude's trying to take its first breath, and I mean, everything I have read says that that first breath is the hardest breath you'll take, because you're going to expand your lungs for the first time with essentially gas that you're never going to be able to expire. There's always residual gas in there, so that first breath is the hardest. This is when the baby's the most vulnerable. At least, I guess, the baby is warm. You know, when the baby comes out, they're going to be going from a hot sauna to, it's like stepping out of a hot shower, I can only imagine. But it's just, I would prefer, if I had the choice, Lou, yeah, that I could deliver the head, I could support the head, I could then deliver the shoulders. Once the shoulders have come, the rest of the baby seems to come quite quickly, and they're like slippery little tadpoles. Like, you got to be careful not to drop them. But I've just moved them straight up onto mum to get their skin-to-skin contact, get some bonding happening. And that's often where I've commenced the active stimulation with a blanket or something, but been very limited interventions because they've been cephalic. Best possible case. When you hear that little baby cry, you want to high-five yourself, even though you've done nothing.
Mum's done it all.
Mum has done everything, and mum will continue to do stuff. And that's where, apart from then, you know, conducting things like your APCAR assessments on that baby, we then also need to conduct some assessments on the mother to make sure there are no potentially complicating bleeds. Cephalic. Good day. High five moment. Get in the newspaper.
Get that photo.
We've been talking about breech deliveries. All right. Breech deliveries are one of the more terrifying because we know, I mean, if that baby does come out head first and starts breathing, that's okay. It's oxygen. If that baby gets stimulated on the way out, as Nick's literally trying to manipulate this thing, the first breath is actually going to be in situ. It's going to be where, you know, the amniotic fluid is and everything else. And so that presents complications immediately for when that child is delivered. To free up these babies who are breech.
For footlings.
Yes.
What are you doing to manipulate that baby in order to get it out of mum safely?
So the feet are not so much the issue because they're little, right? The issue comes when you start to engage, say, the chest and the shoulders.
Because you're stimulating them. Is this correct?
Well, it's partly that, but also the fact that, you know, they're broader. Mm-hmm. They're going to get stuck in a birth canal that hasn't been engaged by a head necessarily. They get stuck around the pubis symphysis, which is where in a shoulder dystocia, where the anterior shoulder gets stuck, is it hits that pubis symphysis and it can't get around and then the head gets stuck. But for a breech, it's really about getting those shoulders past that pubis symphysis and out through the birth canal and then delivering the head as well. So there's two main techniques. I can't remember the names of them. The name isn't important. It's how you do them that is important. Love sets and McRoberts and that one. Who cares about the name? It's probably just...
It's tennis.
Love yeah, it is. So what you're going to do, right, put the baby on your non-dominant hand, your left arm. Baby rests on the arm, right? No, that's the other one. My mistake. Let me go back.
That's smelly feet.
That's the head. That's the second part. This is why we need to practice this. First part is about delivering the shoulders. And to do that, do this thing called thumbs on bums. So where you take your thumbs and you put your thumbs on its bum and hold its thighs, right? And the idea being is that if your hands are there, they're not on the in the abdomen or the chest, because sometimes when you turn, that can cause trauma to those vital organs, right? The issue I found, and I'm no expert experienced person, I've done one, is that when you turn the pelvis will turn and the shoulders do nothing, right? So you're just twisting the child. So you need to kind of go up a bit further to really turn the whole child. you've got to be really gentle. But the idea is you turn it so the baby is perpendicular, the anterior shoulder is sitting up, and then you can go in and essentially apply some downward traction of the child to release that shoulder. And then you put your finger up inside and sweep that arm down, and that delivers the shoulder and that anterior arm. And then you turn 180 degrees and do the same thing, downward traction, sweep up, deliver that arm. And essentially at that point, you have a child that's delivered from the neck down.
Right. And while this is all happening, how's mum going? How's her pain?
She's going to be in a lot of pain, but pain never killed anyone. And pain is a normal physiological process of childbirth.
Said the man who's never delivered a baby.
Correct. Mm. And I'm sorry. I'm a man. I've never had a child. I have never experienced such pain.
Oh, look at that. Shelley's ringing me. She probably wants to talk to you.
Well, here's the question. Should we give ladies who are labouring pain relief?
Shelley, do you want to chime in on this one?
That's a great question. And as someone that hasn't done maternity, in my head, I'm wanting to say yes, if they are asking for it.
Should we fill them with morphine?
What about methoxy? Is that more appropriate?
I think we should definitely offer these patients pain relief.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to get on top of their pain. And I don't think I've ever had a patient who's asked for pain relief.
Interesting.
Oh, really?
Never.
Interesting.
Oh, I have.
Okay.
I have.
I've had friends say they've asked for pain relief. They've wanted it.
Mm. I definitely have. I've had a couple of mothers who probably would have murdered me for it.
And did you give them pain relief?
Yeah, straight up.
Yeah.
What'd you give them?
Methoxy.
What about morphine?
Methoxy had less risk. I don't need needles. They can breathe it in. They can they can metabolize it. They can excrete it quite rapidly. So if there are any complications.
Take it off them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Great. Methoxy. Way to go.
Yeah, 100%. So.
Right.
What are you up to?
I think you have removed. I think mum's given birth at this point. Is that where we're up to?
Yeah, you just talked us through a breech delivery. Mm. Again, I mean, we complicated this by throwing a solo officer out
Sorry.
There. Oh, no, it's okay. It's just if there is backup and if there is someone else on scene.
Hopefully Nick did a sit rep and got backup.
Well, didn't.
A really good team dynamic is if he is busy attempting to catch the baby, regardless of how it's presenting, the partner is doing other things. Like if it is breech or shoulder dystocia, let's prepare the neonatal resus kit.
Yep.
Let's also prepare the major trauma kit for mum, because if the baby's coming out the wrong way, there is a risk of traumatic injury. And one, we want to be able to resuscitate a child. Two, we want to be able to stem bleeding rapidly. So preparing these things, if there is someone else, is actually a really useful intervention for that person who is potentially non-engaged. But if you're by yourself, you're going to be chasing your tail.
Mm.
So, Nick, let's say the baby came out flat, yeah, and the mother was bleeding. Prioritize that ethically, legally.
So I think flat baby needs to be stimulated, and I can delegate that out to the mother that is on scene.
Great.
Here's a towel. Put baby on a safe surface and rub, 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 rub. Right? Be annoying. Tickle their feet. Pull their fingers. Get up on their chest and just be that like annoying little brother, right? You can delegate that out, right? And then assess mum for her bleeding. There is going to be a little bit of bleeding. I think up to 500 mils is a normal amount of blood. So it's differentiating between a little bit of bleeding and a big bad bleed. But I think you'll notice the big bad bleed because it'll be big and it'll look bad.
Time. You're delegating a reasonably confronting task to the mother.
Mm.
Time. How long? The reason I ask is because depending on what you've got to manage on the mother, if there is anything to manage on the mother, you do run the risk of tunnel vision, distraction away from what's going on. Would you set yourself a time limit to check in on that baby, check in on mum?
Yeah, probably.
If you're still managing the bleed and the baby's still flat after 30 seconds, 60 seconds, how do you prioritise?
It's difficult. It's one of those really challenging conundrums because a mother's probably going to be like, look after my baby. Don't worry about me. And it starts to become an ethical dilemma of who is the priority. Do you prioritize mum or do you prioritize bub?
Mm.
And I think The human says bub, but the clinician says mum.
Yes.
Because the clinician says mum can get pregnant again.
Yeah.
But the human is, the bub is the most important person. And it's a very difficult conundrum to be in. I don't think I would ever want to be in that conundrum. But yeah, I think as the wearing the clinician hat, it would always be mum. And even that, if that's like, if you had a flat baby, and I'll use the analogy, if you pulled out a baby that was in cardiac arrest and you're by yourself or you had limited resources and mum was catastrophically bleeding, that child is dead and you wouldn't focus on mum.
And that's the challenge, though, is having these discussions so that we can actually prepare for the unpreparable.
Mm.
You know, we talk about getting comfortable when we're most uncomfortable. I don't think these things would ever be an area that anyone feel comfortable with, but at least if we've discussed it, if we've opened up the conversation, if we've rehearsed these situations in our head, we are far better prepared not just to manage the case, but we are far better prepared to survive the case ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we've taken that time to actually sharpen our axe and prepare for these things, at least then we can justify the reasons why we intervened or thing. You know, it's.
I think we have to accept that sometimes there isn't a happy ending to cases. Mm. There isn't the, whether it's obstetrics, whether it's a cardiac arrest, whether it's anything, whether it's, you know, a mental health patient. Sometimes there isn't a happy story, a happy ending. Sometimes patients just die. And sometimes they would have survived if they were in a hospital, or had different resourcing, or a different healthcare system, or had different timing, or lots of different variables. But sometimes there's just bad outcomes. And that's just a unpleasant reality of the world that we need to be okay with, or at least start to process this before it happens. Are you hungry?
A little bit.
Okay. Any other questions, Lou?
No, I think you've covered it all.
Are you ready to deliver a baby? A human baby?
A little bit. Potentially a little bit more. Ready?
You know, Nick, I love these conversations.
I don't know if I'll ever be ready.
And I think that's actually important. I don't think any of us are actually truly ready, but having these discussions, I've taken so many little bits out of both of you today, just even unpacking these kinds of things. So hopefully listeners do as well.
Fantastic. Hey, thanks for coming on, guys. If you have any questions, qualms, queries, or concerns, please reach out to us on Instagram, Facebook, or on our website, www.theshiftextension.org. But until next time, see you later.